Steinie and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, join 95.7 The Game at Harding Park Friday, September 6th for the Pettinelli Financial Partners Golf Tournament. It benefits the Autism Society of San Francisco. Go to 957thegame.com to learn more. It's presented by ATCO Pest Control, the Bay Area's locally family-owned pest control company. And let's go out to the River Islands guest line. All guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands in Lathrop? And joining us right now is Brad Graham. You can check out his YouTube channel, SF Niners, and he's joining us today. Brad, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Steinie, Evan, great to be on with you guys.
Appreciate it. Let me start here. Kyle Shanahan's indicated that he's going to play the starters, or the plan is to play the starters tomorrow against Vegas. Do you make anything out of that, or why do you think that's the case?
I don't make a ton out of it, because obviously you want to be able to get your starters out there in a bit of a dress rehearsal, get them prepared, kind of going through the motions for the season. So I don't necessarily have too much of an issue with them playing maybe the first quarter, two quarters. I think obviously with what we saw from the Saints, with Brock Purdy going out there with him and a couple starters on the offensive line, that was one where I was like, maybe, you know, considering like the thought process behind that more so than, you know, I prefer Brock to be out there running with the starters and Debo Samuel, Juwan Jennings, Kyle Juszczyk, Kittle, you know, the list goes on. I feel more comfortable in that instance more so than maybe, let's say, the Saints game.
Well, what did you make of the Saints game when he started some of the other starters?
It was interesting because you could see it was a little disjointed. I know Kyle talked about how he was hoping to get one long drive out of Brock in that particular situation, but there was one instance where you had Brock almost take a helmet to the chin, but thankfully you had Dominic Pooney, who had the wherewithal to block two at the same time, that really was able to keep that defender off of Brock. But those are like the kind of concerns that you kind of think about in that particular instance, with Brock playing against the Saints without some of his starters. Maybe guys aren't getting as open as you are accustomed to. And so thankfully he came out unscathed, no real issues. So water under the bridge at this point, but you could see some little concerns kind of pop up where you're like, oh, thank goodness the 49ers were able to get out of there without any injuries or anything like that.
Well, Brad, it feels like, you know, another day, another rumor. I think BA was linked today, I don't know, to Washington the other day. You know, it's Pittsburgh. It's getting kind of tiresome at this point. I'm just kind of curious where you're at in regards to, I don't know, these contract negotiations in which there doesn't appear to be updates, or when there is an update, it's not much of an update. You know, where are you kind of at? We're at with this thing specifically with BA, and how much does it impact the way that you're looking at this season and just kind of the vibe right now of the 49ers?
Yeah, it's been one of the more interesting situations that I've been a part of, obviously covering the San Francisco 49ers, and looking at the whole situation, it kind of feels like the entire NFL has Brandon Ayuk trade or negotiation fatigue at this current point. So I even have like a bit of a running joke, you know, on Twitter that I'm collecting a nickel for every time a rumor or a report comes out. And I have a whole jar full at this point. It's pretty amazing. So I think with where we're at with that, we know that it's a little detail that is keeping this thing from coming across the finish line. And so we're just in a waiting game, and pretty much everything else that's coming out feels like speculation, just based on the fact that we don't know. We don't know where this is headed. We don't know how it's going to finish. We assume it will end with Brandon Ayuk signing a long-term contract with the San Francisco 49ers. But the question now becomes is, when will that happen? And will there be any carryover into the season? Will there be any rust? Obviously, we know he's been holding in. He's been in the facility. He's in meetings. So that's a positive sign. But as we know, these guys need to get out there, and they need to get on the field and build up that callus that comes along with playing padded football. And so the overall feeling is just hopefully that something breaks soon because I'm not sure not only 49er fans, but anyone who works, whether in media covering the Niners or nationally, really feels like dealing with the situation much longer. But the thing with Trent Williams, too, kind of in that same category, at least the tone with that has been more optimistic. And we do know that Trent is a unicorn. He is one of the goats at the position of left tackle. So we know that's a guy who takes a lot of reps and days off in training camp to begin with. So there's less concern there. And so the hope is that the 49ers can take care of both of these guys, because they are going to be key pieces if they want to return to another Super Bowl.
Brad Graham joining us on 95.7 The Game. Check out his YouTube channel, SF Niners. He's joined us before, and we love his insight. Let me ask you about a little personal question about how you'll watch tomorrow's game. So you watch tomorrow's game against the Raiders. Let me just ask, do you go into the game looking for something specific, or do you watch it the first time and kind of get an overall grasp of what you saw and then kind of dissect some specifics about the game itself?
For me, especially like for preseason games, I'm more looking for like back-end roster competitions, like who do I think is going to get that last wide receiver spot, or who's going to get the last cornerback spot. Those are typically the things that I'm looking for and putting a lot of weight and emphasis into. When it comes to the starters being out there, you just want to see some rhythm, especially from the offense. You want to see that these guys are rolling and that there's not a lot of disjointed plays or things of that nature, and they just look good out there, and that's hopefully what you're looking for. But for me, I just kind of watch the game as it unfolds, and I'm big into, you know, breaking down the all 22 after, so that's when I get really granular with watching these preseason games. But for Friday's game against the Raiders, I think the main things you want to look out for is health. You want to see these guys in some form of a rhythm, with the starters being out there on the offensive side. And defensively, you know, if we get the starters, it'll be the first time that we potentially will see Leonard Floyd, Hargrave, Malik Collins, Nick Bosa, new defensive front. So those are the kinds of things that I'm looking for. I don't put much weight into wins or losses of preseason games. It's more of an individual player evaluation for me personally. But again, holistically and high level view, you just want to see that you get out of there without any injuries and that they look in some form of rhythm.
Well, Brad, I'm glad you brought up the defensive line, because it does look a lot different than it did specifically, you know, in the middle than last season. And last season, look, they were 26th against the run, obviously against Green Bay. Detroit not look great on the ground in the postseason. You know, I guess if you were to identify a part of this defense that is, that you want to improve, is that it? Because I'm looking at a secondary that appears to be a lot better, a lot younger, much more athletic. I know that Dre Greenlaw is out, but the linebacking core should improve over the course of time once he returns. Has the defensive line gone from being the unequivocal strength of this team to the one that you might be the most concerned about?
I think if you're going to talk about concerns with the defensive line, you're more looking at kind of back-end depth, because with what we've seen from Leonard Floyd in training camp, I mean, he's as advertised, the length, the power, the speed. You can tell that the combination of having bookend Bosa and Floyd together is going to do wonders. I really do believe that. And with what we've seen from Hargrave coming into camp in great shape, and what we've seen from Malik Collins, this actually does look like a front that will be able to cause a lot of havoc. And I really think that Floyd could be one of those missing pieces of just having bookend speed on the opposite side of Nick Bosa for the first time really since D Ford was out there back around 2019. So there are a lot of positives. And also, too, you can't forget about Yetur Gross-Matos, another addition from free agency. I asked Nick Bosa about his fit into this rotation, and he says he has a ton of upside. The thing with him right now is just trying to grasp the wide nine scheme that Chris Kocurek is so famous for. But he said that they've been on him, and they've been really getting him into that mix. And Yetur is a guy who can play inside out. So he can rush over the guard. He can kick out. He can play base down edge. So he can be your Charles Omenihue 2.0, your Arden Key type. And I really liked what I've seen from Jordan Elliott, a newcomer from the Browns. I think, again, if you're looking at concerns, it's like you have Robert Beal, who's young and unproven. You don't have Drake Jackson coming through that door anymore, as he's going to be on IR with a knee surgery. So the concerns more come from, I would say, back-end depth. But I am very intrigued by the pieces that they've brought in and what we've seen from this group so far.
Brad, the one thing that Kyle Shanahan said Tuesday, I believe, he was asked about Jacob Cowing, who had a pretty good game against the Saints. And he said, you know, he did fine as a punt returner, but that, you know, he's behind, which was, you know, which kind of stuck out a little because he looked pretty good. So my question is this, is if a guy like Cowing is behind, where are we right now with Ricky Pearsall? Do 49er fans have a reason to be concerned about where he's at and his injury?
Yeah, those are two guys that have just been dealing with the injury bug all throughout the preseason, training camp. Obviously, getting to see Jacob Cowing and what he's capable of, that's really promising. And two, he missed a lot of training camp, but the first day back in pads, he had a touchdown, he had an acrobatic catch, he was making plays. Jacob Cowing just strikes me as a playmaker. I had the opportunity to scout him before he was drafted. I spoke to him at the combine. He's a playmaker. He's wired the right way. Even though he's only 5'8", he plays much bigger than he is. So with Cowing, that's a guy where stock is up on him for sure. And I've seen a lot of the concerns about Ricky Pearsall. Obviously, you have a guy who's a first-round draft pick. The thing with him is he's had three injuries since being drafted by the 49ers, but in his college career that spanned over 5 years, he didn't miss a single game. So it feels like a little bit of bad luck for him. And with what I've seen from Ricky Pearsall in training camp, you see the suddenness. You see his ability to run crisp routes. He's got good hands. Obviously, with a rookie who's learning a new playbook, learning a new quarterback, learning the whole just NFL in general, there's a lot coming at you. So you want those guys on the field. But I think in the long term, as long as Ricky Pearsall can stay healthy, and as we know, the best ability in the NFL is availability, if he can just stay available, I think he's going to be just fine. But right now, that's the concern, is when is he going to be back? Is he going to miss any regular season games? Because I know 49er fans are chomping at the bit to see Ricky Pearsall in red and gold.
Yeah. Brad, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it, man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, that's Brad Graham. Check out his YouTube channel, SF Niners. And don't forget, all guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands? River Islands in Lathrop. Brad Graham.
Yeah, I always feel more informed after talking
Brad
to
Graham.
Him. SF Niners.
Yes.
No, I always feel more informed after talking to
no
him
doubt.
About being just really everyone on this roster. You know, I think also the question about like how he's watching this game, you know, getting like I'm going to be taking something away from the first half, and he's right. It's not about wins or losses necessarily, but you would like to see the offense in rhythm, because so far we haven't had a chance to really see him in rhythm. And I think also too, getting his thoughts on the defensive side of the ball, you know, because of football and points and the modern game and the quarterback and all the rest, we do typically tend to discuss what happens on that side of the football. But I think for the Niners last year, a lot of our questions, just because of how high flying the offense was, centered on, well, what's going on with the defense? Like, how come they're giving up points? How come they can't stop the run? And him highlighting a lot of the things that they addressed this offseason, it's got me feeling a little better, Steiny.
Yeah, I mean, isn't it as simple as this, though? And I get it, it's just a preseason game, but they're playing the Raiders. Offensively, they're going to have essentially their starting unit in with the guys who are available, and they're playing against what looks to be the second team of the Raiders. I mean, isn't it as simple as they better look cohesive? Because if they don't, You can't tell me that doesn't matter if they don't look cohesive against the non-first unit of the Las Vegas Raiders. That's got Kyle Shanahan, I would think, has to see that at the very least.
I'd agree, but I'm sure we're also going to hear some people saying, well, it's the first time, you know, Kittle and Debo are getting those live reps. You know, maybe they aren't going to look as crisp.
Yeah, they won't have McCaffrey either.
Or on the defensive side of the ball. But, and I mean, look, I'm with you. I do think that the first half of tomorrow night's game is valuable because it's the first and really final chance we're going to see the offense together. And it sounds like it's the first time we're going to get to see a lot of the defensive starters together. So, and not just Purdy being able to move the ball with rhythm, but also if the Raiders' backups are picking up chunk plays and just moving the ball right down the field against the Niners' starting defense, that also would be a bit concerning to me.
Yeah, it is fair to point out that they won't be with Trent Williams or Ayuk or McCaffrey or even Pearsall. Pearsall's the guy who's interesting to me. He is somebody I want to see play. Like, I want to see if he's the type of receiver that can help him this year. And I'm not talking about being their number one, but can he begin to produce his rookie season? And everybody talks about, you know, the Brandon Ayuk contract where you want him to partner with Purdy for the next, you know, 4 years, and ideally you bring Brandon Ayuk back and then you re-sign or you sign Purdy to a long-term deal and you have those two. I think Ricky Pearsall is an important part of that also because he's a rookie. I mean, you get Ayuk in here and you re-sign or you extend, rather, Brock Purdy, then you've got your quarterback and ideally your one and two receivers who are going to play together for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I always wonder what the plan was, though, right, with Pearsall, because in a perfect world, he's your third or fourth wide receiver, and probably is your fourth if Jennings is healthy, Debo and BA, obviously, and that fourth receiver doesn't typically see a lot of time in a Kyle Shanahan offense that's probably more run-predicated than most, so I think ideally the first year was to him get him acclimated and like he can also return punts, you know, perhaps kicks. But I always felt like the Pearsall pick was supposed to be for something further down the line. So the fact that we haven't seen him yet, yes, it sucks. I would love to see him play football and I would love to see what kind of receiver he is. But at the same time, I never expected him to be a reason why this season goes one direction or the other. I expect him to be a big part of next season and, you know, maybe get on the field if somebody gets hurt. But I don't know about you. I always looked at Ricky Pearsall as like a contingency plan, like, you know, kind of just there in case an emergency hatch.
Right. George Kittle, 49ers tight end, was on with the Morning Roast today, and they had a great interview with George. And let's not forget, this team obviously was in the Super Bowl last year, and this year, is there such a thing as a Super Bowl hangover? They asked George Kittle about how did they move on from the Super Bowl, or how are they moving on from that tough loss?
I'm pretty good at flushing stuff and moving on. Like, if you let things linger and control, like, your thought process and stuff, I mean, it's just going to slow you down for the next upcoming season. There's nothing I can do to change what happened. Would have preferred to win. We didn't. But if I just let that continue to linger, it's just going to affect my overall performance and attitude for this upcoming season. And the great thing about football is it just keeps coming every single year. It's just there right again. It's ready to – you're either going to take advantage of the opportunity that's in front of you, or you're going to let it – are you going to let it, like, just hit you in the face. So I think we're really excited to go back there. And, you know, you might have an emotion or two when you walk into the stadium, for sure. Like, I'm not going to try to suppress that by any means. But and I'm pretty good. I like where my team's at. The guys are feeling good. And I'm just excited to go play football because I actually get to, you know, lace up the cleats for a preseason game.
And he was obviously making reference to going back to Vegas where they lost to the Kansas City Chiefs in the Super Bowl. But the one guy I don't worry about in terms of a hangover is Kittle. Because yeah. I do think that he's what we just heard from Kittle is the way he actually is.
Yeah, and he's very open about that. You know, whether it's watching the receiver doc on Netflix, whether it's talking to him after games or listening to him in press conferences. Yeah, Kittle I'm not worried about. And I believe that is how he approaches and will approach Friday. He's going to walk in there. He's probably going to take a couple of those patented Kittle deep breaths. Maybe, you know, go talk to his buds a little bit, joke around, and he's going to take it all in. I'm not worried about Kittle. I am worried about some of the other players that aren't as perhaps, you know, I think Kittle is one of the most strong-minded individuals in the NFL. So he doesn't concern me. But other players that aren't, that just don't have those intangibles that Kittle naturally has, I am going to worry about, not tomorrow in a preseason game, but what a Super Bowl hangover can do. Because something else that Vernon Davis also talked about was the difficulty of that. You know, they made it, they were on the goal line, they were on the 1 yard line of a Super Bowl, and they couldn't punch it in. I think proverbially, the Niners last year felt like they were on the 1 yard line against the Kansas City Chiefs, and they couldn't close the game. Sure, is that going to affect Kittle? No. Maybe it didn't affect Vernon Davis, but it might have affected a couple of the linemen that played in that game. It might have affected, you know, a member of the secondary. It might have affected the head coach.
Yeah.
You know, it might have affected people in that front office. I'm not sure. It's a really hard thing to overcome, and at least appreciate how easy he makes it sound.
Yeah, I actually didn't get a chance to hear the interview because I was on BART, but this sounds like something I want to hear. George Kittle was asked, what we don't see from Brock Purdy that makes him a special quarterback?
What you don't, like, you guys don't get to see is one thing I've always talked about that, like, I think is what elevates, like, just something that elevates quarterbacks from different quarterbacks is when you step in the huddle and, like, your voice and your presence gets the attention of all 10 other guys in the huddle. Because, like, I've been in a lot of huddles my entire career, and, like, while I love all the quarterbacks that I've played with, some of them are just, like, they've got it, whatever that is. And he steps in the huddle, and all 10 eyes are on him. Everybody's looking at him. And, like, just his confidence that he speaks these plays with, how his understanding of the offense, like, he gets it all, like, just in those 5 to 10 seconds that you're in this huddle. And just, like, I don't know if it's inspiring, but I think it's more of a, his confidence makes everybody else in the huddle more confident in themselves. And when you're in a huddle with Trent Williams and Deebo Samuel, and you're making them more confident than they already are, holy cow, that's wow. Like, that is something that is very, very good for the 49ers.
That was George Kittle on with the Morning Roast, and apparently, what I heard there is Trent Williams needs a little encouragement.
A little kick in the rear.
You know, that's the kind of sound that I love, because that's perspective on something that we don't usually hear. And it was a great question by those guys. And I'll bet you that over the course of the year and a half that Purdy's been quarterback in the 49ers, that his voice, quote unquote, in the huddle has changed and become more forceful. All right. On the other side, I got a couple. I saw something yesterday online, and I got to tell you, he's done a lot of things that are impressive, but this might have been one of the most impressive things I've seen from the greatest quarterback of all time. I'll tell you on the other side.
Now, back to Steiny and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Yay! We're getting there.
Where?
We're getting closer to my haircut.
Oh, I thought you meant preseason game number 3.
Sure. Pretty much anything works. You know what I'm saying?
I got you.
Mm-hmm.
Crossover?
By the way, yeah, that's coming too. I'm going to get to this in about 2 minutes or 3 minutes, because there has been talk on the YouTube chat and on our text line that I kind of wasn't aware of, and people think I like to stir it up, but...
Did I miss something?
Yes, apparently. But first, let me tell you something. You know Tom Brady?
Oh, yeah.
You've heard of Tom Brady.
He's got a nice head of hair.
See what he did the other day?
No, did he take a shot at somebody?
No. He dunked. He dunked a basketball. He's 47.
Well, he's...
He's 6'4".
He's 6'4".
He's... Did I say... He's 47.
10-foot rim?
47. It actually looked like a double rim, quite frankly. Now, the one thing I will say was he was using a ball that didn't look all the way inflated.
So it's easier to turn it over.
And I mean that with no irony. Because he could easily palm a basketball. And usually it's not easy to palm a basketball. Unless, how about the... I'll tell you what, this is where I just...
I'm surprised that caught your eye, though.
Well, I'll tell you, I was just
like,
going to...
What are we doing? Handing out trophies for dunking a ball?
47.
So? No one's going to come in here and talk about how great you golfed yesterday.
I saw Michael Jordan dunk at 50, and he didn't... He squeezed it over the rim. I'm just saying, Brady.
Does he know how to call a football game? That's what I need to know about this year.
Speaking of palming a basketball, see, I imparted you with knowledge yesterday that is one of a kind.
You're going to have to remind me.
Exactly. I'm going to have to remind you. Wilt Chamberlain could palm a basketball with his thumb and his middle finger. That's all he needed. It's unbelievable.
So technically, would it be palming? Because it's not touching his palm. It's more of his towards the bottom, closer to your wrist.
Oh. It's just a phrase. So I will address... Well, actually, I don't know. I don't even know how to address this, but the YouTube chat, I've seen it pop up periodically, and I will go to an expert on this, which is you. Can you tell me some details on Steph Curry scrubbing references to the Warriors off his IG? There's some people in the chat who are concerned.
Well, yeah. So yesterday there was a picture that was taken off, I think, of him with some sort of Warriors gear on, and then he posted a new picture on his profile of him in Team USA's jersey. And he also posted a picture with him and Durant and LeBron and their Olympic squad, you know, the big three, the Holy Trinity of Team USA. And then what was removed in his bio was guard4@Warriors or Golden State Warriors. So does that concern you? Does that impact their win total for you?
It's not about me. And you made that clear earlier. Not everything's about me.
No, it's about Curry.
Well, you're the Warrior fan. What do you make of it?
What? What are you doing to me, man?
I'm asking you what you think about the fact that Steph Curry is clearly out of falling out with the Warriors.
Well, didn't the rumor also... It wasn't even a rumor. It was a report by Mark Stein also came out 2 days ago that he's going to sign that one-year extension. So maybe he's playing a little hardball right now. Maybe he got a contract offer that wasn't the full $63 million. Maybe he did.
Boy, that would be a gutsy move by Lacob. Hey,
well, he probably lowballed him the first time for previous contracts, right?
Steph, let's get you wrapped up in 2026-27. We're estimating the mid-level that year is going to be about $14 million. Take it or leave it.
$14 million. Give him the D'Anthony Melton.
Exactly. Hey, here's the other little piece. You hear about Aaron Judge?
Oh. Ugh.
What are we coming to?
Seriously.
Exactly. You can't reach out and be nice to some little league players.
What?
Aaron Judge. He stiffed the Staten Island team, according to their coach. And the Yankees were vehement.
Yeah, they should have been.
Why?
Well, Aaron Judge is a great guy. Actually, I saw him here in San Francisco when they came for the series and the Yankees.
When he came to stick it to the Giants.
Well, he hit like three homers in 3 days. It was pretty impressive. But he literally stood before the game and took pictures with kids and signed autographs and kissed babies and all the rest. Just a gargantuan man, but he's got a tender heart. He's a gentle giant.
Well, not according to some guy named Laterza.
Didn't he win whatever man of the, you know, Walter Payton man of the year equivalent is for Major League Baseball last year?
Evan.
What?
That's a media award.
It means he's a good guy.
It means they're falling for his snow job. The media has fallen for it. Aaron Judge is dynamite.
It does highlight just the ridiculous importance that Little League coaches place on themselves. I mean,
yeah, I would agree with that.
Who the hell cares what you think? You're not the story of the Little League World Series. It's not the Little League Coaches World Series. Like, I'm watching Venezuela right now, who, by the way, did you see what they did in the preliminaries?
I did not.
You know, whatever they had to do to qualify to get to the Little League World Series, they played 8 qualifying games. Would you like to guess the amount of runs they scored versus the amount of runs that their opponent scored?
In 8 games. All right. Now, I never just answer this right away. I always like to put this on. Now, the reason you must be asking that is because it's a crazy number. So one of two things. So that they won these 8 games?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so it's either really close, the run differential, or it's not close at all. So I would say it's probably the latter, which means they played 8 games. Those kids hit. Their pitching has been a little suspect. I'm going to say 68 to 21.
89 to nothing.
Stop.
They didn't allow a run in 8 games, and they run-ruled every single opponent en route to the International Championship semifinals.
And guess what?
And then they came to Williamsport and got introduced to domestic baseball.
And Japan hanging in there right now against Venezuela.
But I don't know who the Venezuelan Little League coach is, and nor should I. I should know about their players and these 10 to 12-year-olds who don't all have mustaches, who are extremely good at what they do.
Apparently he runs it up.
By the way, you know who had a mustache when they were 12?
Who?
My little brother. Should he not have been allowed to compete in the Little League? Come on.
He shouldn't have been.
He was a hell of a first baseman.
Right. Until when? The other kids caught up to him. Mm-hmm. All right. On the other side, reluctantly, we'll bring in Willard and Dibs. What's coming up on the game is presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.